You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
All right, welcome back to the Dungeon of Doom. I am Kyle Mikey, Lions beat writer for MLive, joined as always by Ben Raven. Ben, it's December 27. The Lions are still NFC North champs. We're still getting adjusted to it. It is a weird new reality in the Lions universe.
It's just so strange. It really is just so strange how quickly it's happened, how 11 wins with 2 weeks to go. I mean, there are more goals ahead of this team. It's just crazy because it literally feels like we were just in that press box in Minneapolis like 14 hours ago. I don't know if you feel the same, but this has been a whirlwind week for sure.
Yeah, and I mean, I really do. We have some questions about, you know, how this team resets going forward. I guess we can dive in here in the mailbag here pretty shortly. But I have been curious this week to see how they would respond against the Dallas Cowboys. That's a really good team. They haven't lost in over a year at home in Dallas, and it's a short week. And the Lions have spent, you know, the past 48 hours as of this recording, you know, singing and dancing and posting Jared Goff memes and just going wild. And listen, like they have earned it. Like, this is a team that's been waiting 30 years for a championship. These guys who have been around have heard a lot about the history of, you know, this and that what the Lions haven't done. And I saw Amon-Ra St. Brown and a couple of guys posting, I don't think, videos of Lions fans talking about how, like, oh, like, Lions could never do this. They've never done this in our lifetime. Like, obviously making fun of the fact of, like, these kinds of questions that we ask them, you know? Like, they have to hear about this history for forever. They have it literally written on the back wall of their meeting room. So, to have finally broken through, like, there is a sense of accomplishment, and that is understandable, and they have earned the right to celebrate. The problem is the feeling of accomplishment, you know, that can take away some of the hunger and the edge that you have, and I don't want to read too much in anything I've seen or heard, but, like, just being in the locker room, being at practice today on Wednesday, do they have the same sharpness and hunger that they had when they hadn't accomplished anything? I don't know, and we'll see. That's a big, as Dan Campbell said, that's their biggest opponent going forward.
Yeah, I loved what he said to open this week, because that was just the perfect Dan Campbell thing. The biggest opponent for this team is complacency and satisfaction, and I think that's real, because while they do have the veterans in the right spots that have been there before, this is a young team. This is a team filled with guys that laugh, like, at the question, like, what does 30 years mean to you? And Sam Laporta is like, dude, I was born in 2002, like, or 2001 or whatever it was. And it's just like, it's funny stuff, but, like, it's easy not to carry the weight of that. Like, and it's easy to say all those right things, but it is like, this is going to be an interesting test this weekend, because this is a legit opponent. This is a legit environment. It's another primetime game. You know, one of those big goals is knocked down. The fan base and the team is feeling great about it. Can they keep that mentality? Like you said, it's like that's the biggest challenge ahead for sure.
Let's just go ahead and dive into the mailbag, because some of this stuff gets into this anyway. And I think it's one of the most important talking points here as the Lions proceed into week 17, because Ben, for as good as the championship is and everything, you know, there's two more weeks of football to play. Yeah. And they're very consequential. It's not this is not just filler at the end of the season going into the postseason. I mean, they're the number three seed right now. They'll do no worse than that. But by winning out, they can get the two seed and potentially an extra playoff game at Ford Field. And if San Francisco loses one of its final remaining games while they win out, they would have the number one seed and a first round bye, and they would have to leave Ford Field until the Super Bowl. I mean, like there is a lot to play for here against Dallas and Minnesota. So let's dive in to the mailbag here. Again, these questions can always be sent via the subtext program. Go to any Lions story in MLive. Go to the bottom. You see all the information you need to sign up for free and bother Ben and I with direct text messages.
A new thing this week has been people accidentally texting us and saying, oops, sorry, that was meant for my son. And I'm like, all right, we're hitting new levels of subtext, baby.
So Ryan Comick, a regular here, he wants to know, Dan Campbell said the biggest opponent will be complacency this week after winning the first division title in 30 years. I believe this game in Dallas is a huge measuring stick to see just how far we can go in the postseason this year, because this is the best home team in the NFL record-wise. My question is, who do you think this game means more for, us or Dallas, coming off of two road losses of their own, not just for positioning, but for the confidence going forward? It's a good question. I think just generally Ryan's getting at, you know, the stakes of this game and how ready the Lions will be with regard to the complacency factor. What's your sense of that, Ben?
I do lean towards Dallas in this conversation. Like you said, two road losses. They don't have the division clinched up. They're a game back of Philadelphia. They're honoring Jimmy Johnson at halftime. Saturday night in Dallas. They haven't lost since last year's season opener. This game means a heck of a lot to the Lions in terms of seeding and confidence, because it is one of those meaty playoff matchups before the playoffs. But Dallas has got a lot more riding on the line. Like, yeah, they're going to be a playoff team, but they can do themselves some favors with a big win here right now, too, because they lost that game last week. We were just about to record our podcast in Minneapolis when they lost that on a last-second field goal. And, I mean, they came back, scored in the final 2 minutes, so they kind of took a shot there. And this is a confident team. They got a great quarterback. They got stars at all the right spots. They need to get back on, because they can still compete for the NFC East and get into the higher seeds, too. So there's more on the line for Dallas. As much as this means for Detroit, I do think I lean the other direction.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really want to play the game of who it matters more for, because it matters a hell of a lot for both teams. And for me, it's going to have a playoff-like atmosphere. That's what we're going to experience, because the Lions have – this is a postseason team already. They have a lot to play for still. And Dallas is fighting for even more than the Lions are. Like, this game – and, Ben, this is going to be a playoff game-like atmosphere. And I have covered a Lions-Cowboys playoff game in Dallas, and I'm telling you, that atmosphere, like, you could have cut the atmosphere with a knife. I mean, it was such a cool – I'm just speaking as a Lions beat writer here. Like, I don't have a ton of playoff experience, but even when you're seven stories up in a press box, you can feel the electricity in the air. You can feel it on your skin. It really – like I can't imagine what it's like for a player. When players talk about how different the and he's just dropping papers.
My bad. The research.
Got an amateur over here. But like, when players talk about the playoffs being different than regular season football, like I think I understand what they're saying, because you feel like every play feels bigger, every like swing of the game feels bigger, and you got to be able to like handle those swings of emotion, because the swings of emotion will be greater. They'll feel greater than they do in the regular season. Every mistake is magnified. Every touchdown is magnified. I mean, you got to be able to handle all this stuff emotionally with some maturity. And usually that comes with experience, just like anything else. And the Lions are a team laden with inexperience when it comes to games like this. To that end, I'm curious to see how they handle everything on Saturday at AT&T, because this is a team that has performed its best in prime time, back against the wall, haters hating on you. Like, they go into Kansas City. Like, okay, what they did in Green Bay last year was fantastic. And in the finale, everyone loved it. But they were red hot. Green Bay was barely trying to squeak into the playoffs as it was. Like, the opener this year was something totally different. You're going into the house of the defending champs on banner day. and you beat them. And that's the Lions team that we've seen in prime time, the biggest stakes and all that. And it really kind of defies what you typically see from teams in those situations. It's usually the more experienced teams with winning that have the best success in those kinds of environments. The Lions are not that, and they're a young team on top of that, one of the five youngest teams in the league. And yet, they are these primetime babies. They've won five games in a row in primetime. That's the second longest active streak in the league right now. I mean, this team plays its best in these kinds of situations. And so when you go into Dallas and you have a different kind of feel, a playoff feel, and it's something you're not really accustomed to, I just think this week, yeah, Dallas is a great opponent, and you always learn something by playing a great opponent. And it's also an opponent they could see itself in the postseason. But beyond that, just how do you navigate the emotional challenges of this week? Are you up for the test? Do you come out flat? Do you come out sharp? Are you too up and down? Like, I think there are things the Lions will learn about their football team this week. And I'm excited, man.
Oh, I'm so excited. I cannot wait to be there for that environment. It is going to feel like a straight playoff game. And it's coming at a perfect time, too. That Kansas City game, that feels like years ago at this point. This is going to be a refresh, like you said, to what moments like that feel like, are going to feel like in 2 weeks' time. So, yeah, it's a big one. It's a big one.
What do you got?
I'm taking the Cowboys.
I am too.
Yeah. Yeah. We both said that to each other in the locker room, and it was pretty quickly. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I was just saying it for podcast purposes, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Like we had recording. Like we hadn't already had the conversation. No, but I think Dallas is a very good team. They're also coming off back to back road losses. So they're going to be hungry. They're going to have that edge to them that I really feel like, listen, the Lions could prove me wrong. They mm-hmm. like they have been so good this year. I think they're a very good team. Like, I picked them to win 12 games. Yeah, like, exactly. I'm not hating here, but I think this is a young team that's kind of incurring some challenges they haven't really seen before. This is a different kind of football they're going to experience here the rest of the way, basically. And again, I don't want to make mountains out of molehills, but I just, having spent some time in Allen Park this week, I just feel a sense of accomplishment. And I've been around the league a long time. I know what happens when a team kind of feels like it's made it. And I feel like, you know, the Lions have struggled for so long to get over that hill of a division title, and they've done it. Kudos to them. But there's more to be played this year. And I think that I fear when you go into into Dallas, a great team with a great defense, one of the most fearsome pass rushers in the league. And really, I mean, there's so much more than just Micah Parsons, but I just think they're going to have a hard time handling it.
Yeah, it's what we've been talking about for weeks now. It's an elite quarterback. It's an elite wide receiver in CeeDee Lamb. I mean, Dak is playing like one of the most aggressive quarterbacks in the league, and he's protecting the ball better and getting a little more luck from those tips and drop balls too. I mean, CeeDee, Dak, and Micah Parsons is as good as a threesome at the top of your roster that you're going to see. And yeah, it's I would call today low energy Wednesday, I would call it. I felt it. I kind of felt it since we got in the building today, too. I'm not saying that's going to pick a result on Saturday, but like, it's just one of those days for sure.
Being in the locker room, I felt that. And then at practice, I just saw some. And again, just to be clear, we're only there for 20 minutes. Yeah. And it's like the least important 20 minutes. So who knows? Maybe they had the greatest practice ever. Right. But in the 20 minutes that we were out there, like, I saw drops and I saw some like sloppiness in bag work with the footwork, and Melifonwu, who had the game ceiling pick and has been fantastic, and I wouldn't doubt the way that guy is playing anything that he could do going forward, but he just had a terrible rep when they were doing like open field pick drills. Like, he just totally misjudged where the ball was going to go, and I'm like, that's a guy that's not concentrating. You know, it's just that guy that's not concentrating. So, you know, mountains, molehills, all of that. I'm not saying the Lions are going to get their pants blown off in Dallas. And they've besides the Baltimore game this year, they've really shown up for every game. I just have some concerns.
Yeah.
And I'm picking Dallas. You know?
No, same here. I'm with you. I don't think it'll be a disgusting blowout, but I do think pretty confidently that the Cowboys are going to take this one.
All right. Michael Berry Sr. asks, I realize there's more important work to be done for seeding, which is important. However, how important is it to remain healthy for the playoffs? Risking injuries could really hurt our chances. And there were a series of questions in this vein. How would you expect the Lions to handle week 18 if our seeding is locked in, from Jared Eisenlohr? This may sound like a stupid question, but on a scale of 1 to 10, how hungry is the roster to get a higher seed? I'd hate to see them look complacent. Dallas, from Raymond Nuznoff. Like, clearly there's a concern out there about, like, you know, how ready are the Lions right now in terms of complacency? How hungry are they for seeding? What happens, you know, in terms of, like, are they going to rest starters and whatnot now that they've secured a title? Ben, how do you see some of this dynamic playing out?
I think it's a different conversation if the seeding is locked in for week 18. But yeah, I mean, Dan Campbell said it. I mean, I was shocked by how open he was about talking about the seeding stuff on Monday or Tuesday or whatever day it was. I mean, the 2 seed is their goal right now. That is within reach. They don't need any help. If they take care of their business, they can hit that 2 seed. And like, they do want that. I mean, Aiden Hutchinson in the locker room today, I mean, interesting vibes there too, but like he also said, like, man, I don't want to look back on this season and say, sweet, we won the division. Like, I want more than that. Like, this, like, and he's like, I'm speaking for myself and my teammates here. I don't feel like we're being complacent, but like, I don't want to look back on this year and just be division champ. So they're saying all the right things. It's coming off the holiday. I do think that's worth mentioning today too. So we'll see tomorrow, but yeah, man, the fans can feel it too. There's like 7 complacency questions.
Well, maybe we should just roll the tape of what Dan Campbell mm-hmm. said then. That's where a lot of this is coming from. And just to be clear, what Dan said was exactly right. I just think he was so eloquent in the way he talked about how, you know, complacency yeah. can set in at a time like this, particularly with a young team, and that's what the Lions are. You know, he's taking the right tact. And I know that was a, you know, when he addressed the team at the start of this week, this was the message. Like, hey, congrats, guys. But 10 years from now, you're not going to look back and be super happy looking at your finger with a division title ring. Like, no, like, that's not what anyone's playing for. You're playing for the Super Bowl. And the Lions are in very good position to have a favorable path in the playoffs. They're already going to host a game at Ford Field, which is fantastic. But they can do more for themselves to actually, you know, I mean, I looked it up. Like, when was the last time the Lions were anywhere but the bottom seed in the conference? Yeah. It was 1993. They've made the playoffs 4 times since then, and every time they were the bottom seed. And they haven't advanced, you know, no surprise here, since 1991. And it's because they have not set themselves up to be able to navigate the field, and they have a chance to do that this year. And that is Dan Campbell's message. Let's just roll the tape, since this is where a lot of this stuff is coming from.
That's the biggest opponent right now for us is really the satisfaction, complacency. That is what we're going to fight from here on out. And they're going to know that. We'll have a meeting here in a little bit, and we got smart guys. They understand that, because all these questions, no different than, and I understand why you'd ask it, why it is a big story, because it's been 30 years. But if we continue to talk about it and we answer them and we live in that moment, then we're not getting to the next thing. And it's really no different than what happens in the playoffs. You win a big game in the playoffs, but you don't have time to really enjoy it. You got to get ready for the next one. I wish we had more time to enjoy it, but we don't. And we're off to the next one, and we got to want more. We got to stay hungry, or we won't be able to get the next one. You know, when you have a young team, there's things that come with that, you know, and it doesn't mean there's a lack of want to or anything. It's just, you know, look, in today's age, it's all right there, and it's immediate, right? It's on your phone, and if you're not careful, you'll get caught up in the good and the bad. And I just bring this up again. The reality, it's not black or white. It's gray, man. You got to live in the gray and take it for what it is. Because if you win division, everybody thinks we're all of a sudden we're the best. Dude, that you don't know that. What you do know is what's on tape. And when things go bad, it's not as bad as everybody says it is. It's just not. So take it for what it is, and trust what your eyes see and what you're hearing, people you trust, and the rest of it doesn't matter.
Yeah, I mean, like, Dan has many superpowers. I think one is to really be able to capture the spirit of the moment in an authentic and interesting way. And I think it's a big reason why players really like him. It's never coach speak with him, and it's never fake with him. It's just from the heart, and it's also something real. And clearly, you know, Dan's been around a long time. He was around, what was it, 4 division championships when he was in New Orleans. won a few as a player. He's seen the good and the bad of how teams react to a moment like this. And so, you know, sometimes it's a lesson you just have to learn on your own. And maybe the Lions are in that boat, but Campbell certainly is trying to prepare them for what awaits them here in the last 2 weeks of the season.
And no doubt, I mean, if they are complacent against this Cowboys team, they will get their butt smacked. So, I mean, this is a very good team. This is a top tier team.
I mean, Miami's great. I think Miami is going to be extremely difficult to beat. And Dallas took them in Miami to the final second.
Yep.
They missed a good team.
In the pouring rain. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. can run the ball, can pass the ball, can rush the passer, and that's a pretty good combination.
I mean, the Parsons stats are crazy. Like, that's just unbelievable.
Yeah, I am curious, though, you know, like, I think the Lions, they could have some issues in this game, but their biggest strength is their offensive line. And Taylor Decker missed practice on Wednesday, which is when we're recording this. Don't know anything on Thursday yet, or really the seriousness of his condition. He was limited on the report on Tuesday. I'm not sure if that's a good sign or a bad sign that it was limited Tuesday, out Wednesday. But assuming he plays, I think, you know, with Decker on the left side, so, because they move Parsons all over the place. So having Decker on the left side playing at a very high level right now, Sewell on the right side, one of the best offensive tackles in the league. You have a solidified center, Frank Ragnow playing unbelievably. Graham Glasgow playing unbelievably. He's got to be one of the best values from free agency this past year in the league. And I would need to like look at some of the other contracts. Maybe some other mid-level guy blew up or something. But Glasgow being able to step in a right guard when Vitae got hurt, and then stepping in at left guard, and then stepping in a center and playing all positions at a high level. Like, usually in the NFL, you see offenses get hurt when they lose an offensive lineman. You know, the depth is not good. And it felt like no matter who the Lions lost on the interior, the blocking held up both in the run and the pass games. Jared Goff continued to do his thing. Gibbs continued to do his thing. Montgomery, I mean, there's a reason why this offense has really rolled and done so despite injuries up front. And Graham Glasgow is the biggest reason why.
Yeah, he's already worked his way into the conversation of being like the two or three best signings of Brad Holmes's tenure here in Detroit. And it's just, you talk about value. You look back at the offseason, the Broncos let Glasgow go, and then they spent $120 million on their offensive line. And you look at what he's doing here in Detroit while playing multiple positions. I mean, I know PFF grades aren't anything, but I think he had like a 93.8 overall grade last week. Like, that's unbelievable. And Decker doesn't get enough love. He's fourth in the league among tackles and pass block win rate. Sewell's sixth. And Parsons, guess what? He's number one by a lot, and he sees 33% double teams, which is the most among edge defenders, and he still leads the league in pressures with 97, nine more than anyone else. So it's like, this is that cliche of like, it's good on good. Like, this is truly elite on elite.
See, this is why Ben's girlfriend hates him, because he's sitting around burning the midnight oil, memorizing Micah Parsons' stats. Just, he has no
I
notes.
I dropped my papers.
He has no notes in front of him.
I dropped my papers. I dropped them. You heard them drop. Oh, God. What's going on, everyone? Ben Raven with MLive's Detroit Lions beat here. Just want to point in the direction of MLive's new Dungeon of Doom Insider Tech service. Sign up now for a 14-day free trial. And then after that, it's only $4.99 a month to text with myself, to text with Kyle Monkey, and to text with Corey Woods. And not only are you going to get updates and analysis from us with some one-on-one individual conversations on the side, but you're going to be on the front line to be featured on MLive's Dungeon of Doom podcast when we come calling for mailbag questions. Once again, check out joinsubtext.com/Dungeon of Doom. 14-day free trial, $4.99 after that.
Speaking of the offensive line, Christian Anderson from Anger, North Carolina. Again, I love when people put their locations. We get them from all over the place. Got one from Berlin, actually, which we should have used last week. But I just love seeing the crowd from all over the place.
Yeah, I love it.
Christian wants to know, given the importance of having the full group of offensive linemen healthy, how critical will it be to re-sign Jonah Jackson after this season? I'm guessing we will draft an interior lineman, but we are a different offense when all those guys are healthy. And I'll just read one more question real quick, because it kind of goes with that one. Brandon Thornton wants to know, with strong offensive line play being central to this team's core identity now and in the future, has there been any chatter on re-signing Jonah Jackson or Graham Glasgow? So, like, the Lions have security up front on the outside and with Frank Ragnow, but at guard, they don't have anyone signed, I guess, except for the rookie, right? He's around, obviously. My flu-addled brain right now is drawing a blank on his name.
Colby Sorsdale. There it is. Yep.
My God. It's been, yeah. So there are obviously huge decisions to make on several fronts. Jordan Jackson's a very good player. He's also going to cost a lot of money to re-sign. Graham Glasgow is also a really good player, slightly older, probably will come cheaper. And it's also demonstrated that he wants to stay in Detroit. Yeah. He spent a lot of time in this area playing in Michigan. The first few years of his career were in Detroit, started his family here, has deep ties to Ann Arbor, and told his agent when he hit free agency last year, like, hey, like, I know where my market value is, but if the Lions hit this particular number below my market value, bring me home because I want to go play with my buddies and win football games. And guess what? That's exactly what happened. Yep. He came home and he's played a lot of good football with guys. Like, he was roommates with Taylor Decker when he, you know, as a rookie. Like, it's kind of unheard of in the league when you're making millions of dollars. Guys don't typically get roommates, but these guys were tight they really love each other. Frank Ragnow was in that mix as well. These guys are right. Christian is right. Like, the Lions are a better offensive line. They're a better offense when Jonah Jackson plays. But, like, I don't know what his market number will be. He's missed some games this year. Maybe that will tick it down a little bit. It might be a better deal for the team. But they have deals with, like Amon-Ra St. Brown is going to make $1 billion next year. Jared Goff probably will get an extension. I mean, it's no certainty, but he's in that mix. Guess Penei Sewell coming down the pipe. I don't want to be the bearer of bad news, but Taylor Decker has a contract year next year. There are some big money things happening for Detroit. They still need cornerback, like top shelf cornerback help. They need a top shelf edge rusher. Obviously, they have the draft to address some of these things as well. But you can't address everything in the draft. And so they're going to have to spend a lot of money at some key positions. And I just don't know if spending premium money on a guard is in the fold for this team. And if that's the case, I could definitely see a situation where they spend less money to re-sign Glasgow, who has also the versatility to play multiple positions. And I think that's really key when you have a guy like Frank Ragnow, who's playing through an inoperable toe injury basically for the rest of his career, having a starting caliber player like Glasgow, who can then move over to center and play at a high level there too. It just, I think, fits together very nicely, and that includes the economics of it. But if you lose Jonah Jackson, I think you go into the draft with interior offensive line at the top of your wish list, because that thing is what really makes this offense go.
Absolutely. And it's kind of been in my gut for a little bit, as well as Jonah Jackson fits here. As good as he has been every step of the way, it just kind of feels like that's going to be one of those tough decisions that has to be made, because as you get better, as your young core gets better and runs out on those contracts, you're going to lose pieces you don't want to lose. You're going to have to make tough decisions you don't want to make. But Graham Glasgow makes that a little easier. Having draft capital makes that a little bit easier, because, shoot, we were talking about Osiris Torrance last year. I was talking about Zion Johnson 2 years ago. Like, guard has been kind of a creeping need these last 2 years, and now it's slapping them in the face. Because, like you said, Big V, that feels done forever. And, just Graham, I'm very curious about that. But, like, the way he's fit, the way he's performed in this system, the way he has seamlessly come back and felt like he's never left, I mean, you kind of want that guy around. I mean, seriously. And, I mean, sorry, you got to save money for those two tackles. You got to save money for St. Brown, and you're going to have to pay your quarterback. And unfortunately, as good as Jonah Jackson is, as much of a piece he is of this, it's like, man, that franchise tag is too big, and that contract is probably going to be way too big for a 25-year-old guard who's already made a Pro Bowl.
Yeah. I would also say I feel like it's, you know, you have to spend serious draft capital to get a top-end receiver. It's hard to find, obviously, a quarterback in the draft. You know, edge rusher, you got to go top 10 to get some of these difference makers, usually top 15 pick. You know, if you want a premium guard, you can do it in the second and third round most years, and you can do it in the first round too if you're willing to do that. I mean, Frank Ragnow is a pretty good player.
he was
a guard before he was a center, but I will say Jackson Powers Johnson. Have you seen that guy play in Oregon?
Yes. Oh yeah. Yeah.
Oh man.
Yeah.
That guy. Like, I
great name too.
Yeah. Great name. Like comes from Oregon. I know a different Oregon offensive lineman who turned out pretty good in the NFL.
talk to our buddy James.
Penasuel won the Remington when he was at Oregon as the best offensive lineman in college football. This year's Remington Award winner was Jackson Powers Johnson. He played guard last year. He played center this year. And again, having that positional versatility long-term when you're dealing with the Ragnow injury and kind of managing that over the next few years, it's attractive, I think. Yeah. 330 pounder, like I just think it, you know, power. He plays with speed and space, which to me sounds a little bit like Jonah Jackson. I think that's what makes Jonah so special. Like, he's obviously a really physical player, but he moves so well in the open field. Yeah. That really helps open up the running game and even the play calling in the running game. You can do so many different things when you have a guy who can move like Jonah. So I think that's one name to watch if you were to move on. And you can find other players like that too. I think that's a big reason why I think it's more likely than not that Jonah Jackson's in his final days in Detroit, because he's a good player and they love having him here and they're a better team with Jonah Jackson. I just think when you have to outlay so much money elsewhere and invest so many draft pieces elsewhere, that using a second or a third round pick on a premium interior guy that you can make into your own makes a lot of sense. Jonah Jackson himself was a third round pick. So
exactly. Yeah. Nope. And I Zach Zinter from Michigan, I know he had the very serious injury, but this front office, this coaching staff has kind of proven that they'll take a chance on talent no matter the injury history. So I'm like, an elite guy like that was ranking among the top three guards, interior linemen among all those draft experts, falls a little longer in the draft. Keep your eyes out on that too. I know he's a local kid, but like there are a lot of guard opportunities here and looking forward to getting to that. That feels like another world away. We haven't talked about the draft at all, man.
Yeah. It's a weird, weird world.
New job.
Okay. So John Bloomfield, or maybe John and Bloomfield. I don't know. I keep misspeaking it. My flu, it's so hard to
We're
like
both
read.
There, man.
Yeah. Yeah. Forgive me. My brain's operating like 40% right now. But John Bloomfield or in Bloomfield, I don't know, but hi, John, thanks for the question. What is the feeling on the coaching staff about Kirby Joseph? He's not necessarily regressed, but he certainly hasn't lived up to the expectations in his second year. The showboating after the pick Sunday definitely didn't seem Campbell-like. Ben, you want to tee off on this one first?
Yeah. We kind of touched on that. That was the full Kirby Joseph experience in Minnesota, because – it's like 85% of the time you're wondering what the heck is going on. Is he freelancing out there? Like, he's such a wild card sometimes, but then he just has that ability to just make plays, go up and make plays. And I'm actually kind of curious what Campbell thought about the showboating. I got a kick out of Kirby's explanation the night of on Twitter saying, "You never did that on Madden." So let me just say this. Kirby is as wild as he seems. He is a wild card. I am curious about that. What happens with that safety rotation? Melifonwu, CeeDee Deuce, all those names coming back, working their way up the rotation. But he has regressed some this year. The play has been down some this year. It was very bad in the first half in Minnesota. I mean, it got masked by those two interceptions. I mean, that's what happens. I mean, but yeah, it's been he's a strange ride. It's an up and down roller coaster ride with him. He makes those big swing plays, but he also makes a lot of mistakes that continue to pop up. And like we've continued to allude to, as the quarterbacks and receivers get better, those are going to get more glaring.
Yeah, I agree with all of that, Ben. You know, it's hard to put a price on a guy who can make plays, game-changing plays, turnover, create turnovers that other guys cannot. You know, that's an invaluable skill set in this league, and you'll get paid for it for a long time as long as you can do it. But, you know, there's something to be said for consistency as well, and especially for this regime. Yeah. I mean, look at the kinds of guys like a Penei Sewell or a Amon-Ra St. Brown. Like, that really is the DNA of what they want to be. And they love Kirby because he does manufacture takeaways for a defense that has otherwise really struggled to do that outside of him over the last couple of years. You know, he leads the team in picks during that time. That's important stuff. But the thing is that Melifonwu is balling out. Yep. He was just named NFC Defensive Player of the Week. He was all over the field. He got three sacks in the last two games. Like, he's just so good on the blitz, which we didn't know that.
No,
but we talked to Aaron Glenn this week, and he's like, "You want to know why we put him out there? Because watch him at practice. Like, the guy in the blitz is a hell of a player. Like, And we're seeing it. Mm-hmm. And then obviously he had the game clinching pick there at the end. Malifanu did. He has really been a revelation back there, and his breakout performance gives you options, because when CD Deuce comes back, which could be in Dallas, maybe I put the odds at 50-50. I think, you know, mm-hmm. it's just as likely he comes back next week against Minnesota. But when he does, and you've got Malifanu playing well, you can take Kirby off the field and maybe giving him some medicine, you know, some humble pie, if you will, or giving him a chance to see the game from the sideline. Maybe it would be good for him, and it gives you options. I mean, maybe if you're going into passing downs and you want to have a guy out there who can take the football away, then Kirby makes a lot of sense. But if you're in a run set or whatever, or you just want someone out there that you know you can rely on, I think Deuce and Malifanu might be those guys.
Yeah, it's kind of fun how that conversation swapped in a week. I think they'll find ways to rotate all three in, just because of all the things we do say about Kirby. It's really hard to keep him off the field in passing downs. It's really hard to keep him off the field when you're trailing and you need to flip the field. But it's just like, if Malifanu was going to be this freaking all-around impactful and sound, like, it's hard to keep him off the field. And we already know Deuce knows this system like the back of his hand. I mean, he's got that wild card in him too, but like, he plays within the scheme. Like, he's not hurting this defense by going out of the scheme, at least in the five or six quarters we saw out of him this year. But I'm looking at Kirby as the guy who might lose some snaps for sure. I'm with you.
John A wants to know, with CD Deuce coming back, hopefully, will we be able to blitz more now that the back end will be more solidified? What do you think on that?
Hey, I mean, I'm all for the Brian Branch, Malifanu blitzes, the Gardner Johnson blitzes, just because he's got that ferocious kind of finishing ability and just – absolutely. I mean, Aaron Glenn talked great about the blitzing ability today, and like you just alluded to, that's why Malifanu was in that spot, like, because he has that blitzing ability. I think they have – that's where most of their pressure came in Minnesota, was from the secondary, was from the linebackers. Like, they're finding new ways to create pressure, and that's really important when the other defensive linemen, with the Lee McNeil out, the other edge defenders aren't doing it. So they're finding new ways. Like, it's Aaron Glenn's favorite word, adjustments. He made them. They're making them. They're blitzing. It feels like they're blitzing more. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but last week it was like the pressures, the hits were coming from the secondary, and Gardner Johnson, CD Deuce is only going to help that.
They had four sacks as a team last week. Three of them came from defensive backs and linebackers. Malifanu, we've talked about. Jeez, Brian Branch has also been good. I think he's got like eight or nine pressures, which is phenomenal for a corner. Alex Anzalone also, I think he's got the third most pressures among any linebacker in the league, 22 of them. And he's been, it's only, I think he has 65 rushes too. So 22 pressures and 65 rushes. That's pretty good, Ben.
And that's something new from him too. And that shows that he is comfortable in that spot.
So like, the blitz is obviously, it's been their saving grace in the pass rush last few weeks. The defensive line has really not gotten it done this year outside of Aiden Hutchinson. I mean, you can't have a one man rush. So, the blitz has really helped fill in the gaps lately. It's given quarterbacks something more to think about. It's been very effective. Okay. And having versatile, you know, physical pieces coming at you from the second and third levels, it makes a huge difference. Aaron Glenn talked about the importance of, like, it's not just that we're sending a blitz. It's like, oh, here comes the corner. Like, you can send it from so many directions because some of these guys are so versatile. Mm-hmm. Anzalone can blitz from any of the lanes. Malifanu was coming, you know, in on both sides. So it just gives them a lot of options and something more for the offense to think about, obviously.
Yeah, it's going to be paramount this weekend too, because Dak is elite against pressure, and the Cowboys have a rock solid line. So they're going to have to continue finding ways to create pressure.
And getting CD Deuce, I think, just to answer the questioner, I think it helps also because he's a consistent, even if he's not blitzing, he's a very consistent defensive back. And when you have inconsistencies like the Lions have all over the place on the perimeter at corner, and then you've got a back safety in Kirby who maybe he's doing an assignment, maybe he's doing somebody else's or whatever, it does make it harder to blitz, because if you blitz and then whoops, there's a coverage breakdown on the perimeter in the back or whatever, that's when you get gashed for 50 yards. And we've also seen that. We saw that a couple times early due to Kirby Joseph miscues. So getting back a player like CD Deuce, who is assignment sound, and having guys out there like Malifanu, who's killing it, and so on. Yeah. You'll see more blitzes.
Yeah,
definitely.
They definitely need that. His audible They need his voice out there too. I think they need that spark too.
A swagger.
Exactly.
We're looking for a swagger, man. That is. Like, you know, like they're playing better, but having him out there, man, that it gives you a different level of, you know, F you, basically.
Exactly.
And you need that. It's football. It's a physical game. You need people like that.
Man.
He's our guy. All right. Cam Jones wants to know, how about a shout out in these unprecedented times to Tom Killer Kowalski? For those who don't know, he was our predecessor here at MLive covering the Lions. Legend. I believe this room that we're sitting in is named after him.
Yes, it is.
Tom is the reason I started reading MLive, and you all are doing a pretty – oop, there's a
– hard F.
freaking amazing job of keeping the information flowing all year. Thank you, fellas, for everything you do for us diehard fans. I can say without question that you guys are worth $5 a month.
I love it.
Hey, thanks. Cheers to Kyle, Ben, and all the other hardworking folks. So there's no real question in here. It's just kind of like a compliment. And that's nice. Thank you, Cam.
Hey, no, I mean, yeah, definitely shout out to Killer. I mean, we're West Michigan kids, man. We grew up with the Grand Rapids Press, so absolutely. I mean, I grew up with Killer Kowalski and David Mayo's voice in my head, and Ansar Khan. You know, shout out to those guys for sure. But yeah,
dude, I grew up reading Tom Kowalski from the time I was a small child. My first job in this business was answering phones. On the night shift at the Grand Rapids Press, putting box scores into a computer system that was from about 1995, it felt like. That was my first job. And then my first full-time job was assembling, basically it's called the copy editor. So I would take stories that came in, I would proofread them, and then I put them on a newspaper page and design it and all that kind of stuff. That was my first job in this business, like, you know, working the graveyard shift. Like, I'd put the newspaper together, I'd hit the big red button, and it would go to print, and it was always a nerve-wracking feeling hitting that button. But my point in saying all that was that I was reading Tom Kowalski stories. Like, that was my first job in this business was, oh, here's Tom's story. Let me, like, try to make him sound as good as possible. So I had a lot of respect for him. He was an amazing reporter and died way too soon. And he's missed for sure. And he'd be rolling over in his grave if he knew what was happening right now in the Lions world.
Killer would still be predicting to go 8-8, but he would be loving it.
All right. Matthew Solciak wants to know, it seems almost everyone thinks Ben Johnson is gone after this year. That's a done deal, but I'm not so sure. Your thoughts?
It sounds like some coping.
I don't mean to
brag on you, Matthew, but like that dude's the number one candidate for most teams out there. And I don't even like need inside sources in Carolina or those other teams to know that. I mean, Ben Johnson, there's enough proof that he's the real deal.
Yeah, he's gonna have his pick of where he wants to go. There's no reason he's gonna be back in Detroit next year, no matter how much Eminem tweets at him.
Like, yeah, that's right.
He's been a joy to cover, a real pleasure. Yes. He's good at his job. He's extremely professional. I always love talking to him on Thursdays. He will also be in a new zip code come, you know, February.
And he deserves it, man.
Yeah.
He deserves
it. It's how the business goes. Yeah. I mean, he already came back for an extra year and, you know, he's given the Lions all he's got. And this offense is fun to watch.
Yes.
And he's really put something beautiful together. And I will say, for as beautiful it is to watch, the nuts and bolts of that offense was there before he took over. It's the Dan Campbell vision of, you know, we're going to pound your ass up front and have a couple of backs who can do it in different ways. And we're going to be big and physical, and we're going to outblock you in both the run and pass games. And yeah, we have a quarterback who's pretty good and won't make mistakes, and he can hit our awesome receiver, our awesome tight end, and we're going to beat you. We'll get a lead, and then we're going to grind you down on the ground, and you're going to lose this football game, and we're going to step on your throat while we're doing it. Exactly. That's Dan Campbell. Yeah. And like, sure, of course, the details and some of the sequential play calling we see and these other really amazing things, trick plays and so forth. I mean, that's Ben Johnson. There's a reason, like, he deserves this opportunity. I'm not taking a single thing away from the man. He's incredible at what he does. Like, everyone who works around him calls him a genius. Like, this guy knows what he's doing.
Everyone.
I'm just saying that when he leaves and they promote somebody or hire somebody to lead the offense next year, you're not going to see a dramatically different, like, offensive vision, you know?
Yeah.
I think there will be a transition, and I'm curious to see if there's some regression. That's probably inevitable, because that typically happens when there's a transition like that. But I think Dan Campbell, because he's so charismatic and so well-liked and such a personality, I think he's still thought of as just that,
yeah,
rather than a guy who actually knows football. And he does.
And there's a lot of fear with Ben Johnson leaving. What happens with Jared Goff? I will just say this, perfectly segued into by you, my friend, is that when Goff had his resurgence to end that first season here, when he started playing better, it was right after they fired Anthony Lynn and Dan Campbell took over as de facto offensive coordinator and play caller. I will just say this, Ben Johnson, definitely responsible for a lot of Goff's growth and resurgence these last 2 years. But like, man, it's really easy to see somebody getting their confidence and their swagger and their belief back when you have someone like Dan Campbell believing in you. Like, that is the power of Dan Campbell. Yes, he's charismatic. This dude is a football genius, man. He came up under Bill Parcells and Sean Payton. He's a studier of Jimmy Johnson. It was awesome to hear him talking about Jimmy Johnson this week. This guy is a football nerd somewhere. He's a meathead for sure, but he is a football nerd at the same time, too. So just have some faith that this team's DNA is Dan Campbell, and that's as good as you can get in this league.
I mean, have some faith that he hired Ben Johnson, yes, in the first place. You know, like when things went sideways in 2021 in the first season of this rebuild, and they're 0-8 at the halfway point, and they make that change during the bye week. Dan Campbell did take over the play calling and did a tremendous job down the stretch, but he took Ben Johnson then, like, he's born like 3 days before me or something. So at that time, when 34 coaching tight ends, and is like, hey, this tight ends coach has never done anything besides coach receivers and tight ends in the NFL. This guy is going to coordinate our passing game. And yeah, like together, they made Jared Goff, who had played shitty football for 2.5 years. He was like a top five player in the second half of that season, mm-hmm, or so, maybe top 10. I don't know. And ever since then, Jared Goff has been one of the best quarterbacks in the league. So, yeah, like, Ben Johnson's great. Like, there's a reason why everyone wants him. He's going to get maybe not $15 million a year.
Oh,
like,
my goodness.
I don't even want to repeat the reporter's name. Nope. I have no respect for how she's doing business. But I will say that Ben Johnson will get a coaching opportunity because he's so smart and so such a good communicator. Players love playing for him. And you can obviously see on game days what he's able to do as a play caller in game. But Dan, there's some level of genius, I think, to what Dan, yes, Campbell does. Like, I think he actually relishes that people think of him as just this, like, character, basically. Like, because there are coaches like that are, mm-hmm, charisma. You see it a lot in the college game. And you see it sometimes in the pro game too. And it's like, he has that, but it like masks what's actually going on underneath him, which is actually a very, very smart football man. And, you know, it's the DNA of what the Lions do.
Yeah. And that's why it's so tasty to look back at all the press conference haters, the kneecap quotes, man, yeah, and putting the helmet on and people just, oh, the Lions deserve better. It's like, I that's been so juicy to look back at those terrible takes in the moment before they had even played a game. So, yeah.
Well, the thing is, like, everyone gets takes wrong. We get takes wrong. Like you're not putting a prediction out there because you think, okay, I think this is like, I predict the Lions to go 12-5. So I bang the table and think the Lions are going 12. And then I'm like shocked when they don't go 12-5. Like, you know, people get stuff wrong. But with the Dan Campbell stuff, it felt like there were some really intense takes about him that didn't feel so, yeah, like, genuous. Like, they felt disingenuous. And they didn't feel real tethered to the reality of who he was, where he was coming from, what people were, yeah, saying about him, what he brought to the table. With the opening that existed here, which was a toxic dump fire, and they needed a certain kind of touch to come in. They didn't need a, like, iron fist to come in. That was the last thing they needed at that time. They needed people would heal the burned bridges within the locker room and the mistrust that players had of coaches, how upset players were with being in Detroit, feeling like some players felt like they got hurt because of how things were run by Matt Patricia. I know of one player who thought his career ended because of an injury that he sustained because he thinks he was pushed too hard by Matt Patricia. You had Bob Quinn upstairs, like, walling off the football operation from, like, the rest of the organizational operation, really creating some bad blood. Like, there's a reason, mm-hmm, Sheila Hamp went into this and said, hey, we need a more open and collaborative kind of organization. Like, maybe we should restructure this thing so the GM and the head coach are together and they can talk to each other, mm-hmm, and they can report to me. And We want to have this permeate all the way down through the org. And like that, that was the vision Sheila had when she made those hires, and the people she hired fit that like, to a T in terms of the character profile, Dan and Brad Holmes both. And of course, Dan being the head coach of the team and speaking every day and press conferences and being kind of the face of the organization, he's put some voice and character behind that, that vision. And that's what you've seen play out. And so, yeah, great guy. Like this is why he was brought in. But it's not the only reason he was brought in. He wasn't brought in because he's a teddy bear. He's brought in because he's a guy who can get along and heal and be a unifier. But he also knows the game, and you're seeing that. And the Lions are winning a lot of games because of it.
Yeah, I mean, it's just the genuine nature of him. Like, those people that were ignoring context just to get a takeout. Those are the people we're talking about. Like, absolutely.
It was frustrating in the moment. It was tethered to reality. No. And I guess that's what maybe because we covered the Detroit Lions and they've been an afterthought for so long that you don't really have the national media swooping in so much and doing that kind of thing.
Yeah,
but you do see it though. Just cheap shots. I was just so struck by like, oh, meathead. Like,
yeah.
There was one out there that was like a racial dynamic saying like the Lions were like basically racist for not like hiring a black candidate. I'm like, wait a second. They just hired a black GM. Like, they just had a black head coach. Like,
assistant GM.
It was like, it felt, that's what I'm saying. Like, oh, willful. Like, I'm just going to write something negative about what the Lions are doing. And Dan Campbell bore the brunt of that because, yeah, he did say the kneecaps thing and people were mocking him for it. But it's like, okay, express your like skepticism, but like, where is your talk about the resume and whatever? Yeah. Like there's players in New Orleans right now saying they would die for him. Yes, like,
exactly. They ignored the fact that he was talking to a laptop in the Zoom era in the most exciting moment of his life. And then also the helmet thing. He was just trying to drum up local support for a freaking local event. So it was just like, context matters.
That is the, you just brought up the, and we have to wrap up. We have more questions, but we somehow went
on a good time today.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I blacked out for a second. I just want to briefly say, I think that's the thing that nobody realizes outside of like this building that we're sitting in right now, that this press conference that went so incredibly viral about, you know, kneecaps and all, he's talking to a computer screen. It's in the middle of COVID. There's no people there. We did even the media was remote. It's like really hard. I'm sure that whole press conference would have gone down differently if he would have been talking to human beings, because, you know, Dan can really read a room, but like he's just talking to a laptop. Before he knows it, he's on like every screen in America.
Yeah, we hadn't met him yet. We hadn't met him. It was just like, so yeah, that's context. Context is king.
Yeah. And 3 years later, division title.
Jesus. From the hellhole this place was 3 years ago, it's unbelievable.
What do you think Matt Patricia's thinking right now?
Jesus. Dagger time.
But just think about this. Lions, Eagles in the playoff.
Give it to me.
That'd be juicy. Because he's calling, for those who don't know, Matt Patricia is now calling defensive plays for the Eagles. Can you imagine Matt Patricia calling defensive plays against the Lions offense in the playoffs?
Give me Rams wild card, Eagles divisional round. Let's get all the meaty storylines. Let's get everything we can out of this run.
I feel like the Rams in round one is like, it's feeling inevitable.
It's happening. It's happening.
It's feeling inevitable.
Stafford, man.
It's going to be wild. All right, good stuff, Ben. We went a little long in the mailbag. Sorry about that, producer Patrick. this weekend we've got Lions, Cowboys down in Dallas. We'll both be down there. Ben got a late green light to make the trip, so he bought a flight that was way too expensive to make it to Texas. We'll both be down there to cover the Lions as they pursue the number 2 seed in the conference with the potentiality for number 1. Lions Cowboys Saturday night. We'll both be down there. Be here back at DOD and over at mlive.com/Lions for all of your coverage from another big game for your Detroit Lions.